Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
A Buffalo police detective is being charged with making purchases on an illicit online marketplace to acquire 194 stolen account credentials. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, a federal grand jury returned an indictment charging Terrence Michael Sizek with possession of an unauthorized access devices with intent to defraud and making a false statement to federal agents. Sizek is accused of making the purchases in 2020 on Genesis Market, whose operators compiled stolen digital data including usernames and passwords. The Erie County Sheriff's Office is warning residents of a phone call scam. The scam features a caller identifying himself as a member of the Erie County Sheriff's Department and will tell the call recipient that they owe money for fines or to provide bail for a family member. Deputies say they will never make direct calls to solicit money. If such a call is received, residents are advised to hang up and report the case to local police. Local health care leaders and a federal representative are calling for supply chain changes following the recent shortage of IV fluids. Congressman Tim Kennedy joined leaders from Kaleida Health, ECMC, and Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center in highlighting the IV shortages that occurred when Hurricane Helene damaged the Baxter International's North Cove facility in North Carolina, the main supplier of dialysis solutions and IV fluids. The shortage prompted some hospitals to postpone some elective surgeries. Kennedy says he has outlined his concerns in letters to the Department of Health and Human Services. A national political party is blasting New York State for its lack of presidential candidates on the November ballot. According to a release from the Green Party, the state ballot will feature only two presidential candidates, a development that has occurred only once in the country in the last 40 years. In 2012, restrictions in Oklahoma allowed for only two candidates, though those restrictions have since been eased. Meanwhile, the New York Working Families Party is working to keep its ballot line status. Party officials say they've been canvassing heavily in recent days as they work to secure the needed 250,000 votes on Row D on the November ballots. Additionally, the party line has been investing in down-ballot candidates throughout the state. A Lancaster man will serve 18 months in prison after admitting to defrauding a COVID relief program. The U.S. Attorney's Office says 45-year-old Larry Jordan committed bank fraud and wire fraud by taking part in a scheme to file fraudulent loan applications for the Paycheck Protection Program. Prosecutors say Jordan's application falsely claimed its business had 194 employees and a monthly payroll of over $240,000, when in reality it had 9 employees and paid out just over $57,000 for the entire year. And the average price for gasoline in Buffalo is down 1 cent from last week, now at $3.33 for a gallon of unleaded gasoline. The national average dropped 2 cents. That average sits at $3.18. New York State average also down 2 cents at $3.22 a gallon. A showdown is brewing in Ontario over the provincial government's move to restrict bicycle lanes in municipalities, especially large centers like Toronto. Correspondent Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Toronto has developed the reputation of having some of the worst traffic congestion in North America. The government of Premier Doug Ford has been building new highways, has increased the speed limits on some 400 series highways, is considering building a 35-mile tunnel under the existing 401 highway that runs east-west across the city, and now is trying to put the brakes on new bicycle lanes. A frustrated-sounding Ford says traffic needs to get moving, especially in Toronto.
I know the city like the back of my hand. You go down on Hospital Row, University Avenue. Paramedics are trying to get someone to the hospital as quickly as possible. They take out a lane of traffic, put bike lanes in there. It's cut down to one. It's jammed like crazy.
And with that, his government is introducing legislation that will require municipalities to get his government's approval before removing traffic lanes to install bike lanes. Ford's transportation minister, Prabhmeet Sarkaria, says the situation has spiraled out of control.
Across our province, we're seeing an explosion of bike lanes, including many that were installed during the pandemic when fewer vehicles were on the road and their impacts on traffic were unclear. When strategically placed, bike lanes are a vital part of every city, offering residents a safe and a reliable way to move around. What cities should not be doing, however, is taking away lanes of traffic on our most congested roads.
Under the proposed law, existing bike lanes will not have to be ripped up under the first stage. But Zakaria says the government will want to see the data for projects over the past 5 years to see if it agrees. He singled out Toronto, which began building a large cycling network during the pandemic. But he adds that what used to be one of the most livable cities in the world is changing, and commuters now waste about 98 hours a year in rush hour traffic congestion. But Toronto Mayor Olivia Chow disagrees with the move.
I do not support limiting city powers. Our city planners and our transportation team have done a lot of hard work in coming up with a plan.
Six cyclists have been killed on Toronto streets this year, and some residents say the Ford government should focus on safety, not a faster commute.
It's not about bike lanes, it's about safety. And this street needs to be addressed before more people die. We don't want to see any more people die on this street. The province would be wise to focus on people's safety rather than commute times.
But Trevor Townsend of Keep Toronto Moving says bike lanes have their place, but not on the city's most congested streets.
It's been very badly executed policy. It makes no sense to put additional cyclists onto the busiest and most dangerous streets in our city.
Some experts say there's no data to support the idea that the proposed legislation would actually make the streets any faster for drivers. Brian Doucette is with the School of Planning at the University of Waterloo, northwest of Toronto.
This is a terrible idea that's not based on any research or evidence. It's going to put lives at risk, and it's not going to solve congestion. Across Canada and around the world, when we see safe, seamless, and connected cycling infrastructure, we see that all mobility improves.
Doucette says he believes the legislation is aimed solely at the City of Toronto and its traffic issues. For WBFO News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto on the Canadian Beat.
The New York Liberty have won the WNBA championship. The Yankees and Dodgers will meet in the World Series. UB football loses on a critical officiating mistake. Plus, the Sabres end their road trip with a win, and the Bills outlast the Titans. I'm Jack Cruiser. This is The Scoreboard for Monday, October 21st. The New York Liberty woke up this morning champions of the WNBA for the first time in franchise history. In the fifth and deciding game last night, New York erased a 12-point deficit against Minnesota with a balanced scoring attack. In the dying moments of regulation with the Lynx up by two, Brianna Stewart drilled two free throws to tie the game at 60 and send it to overtime. In the extra frame, the Liberty outscored Minnesota 7-2, clinching the championship at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. New York's Jonquel Jones was named MVP of the finals, averaging 18 points and 8 rebounds per game in the championship series. It's a pretty remarkable story. New York was the last original member of the league to win a title going back to 1997. In the first 6 years of their existence, the Liberty lost in the championship series four times. Last year, they ended a 21-year drought with a finals appearance, but came up short against Las Vegas. The Liberty's rise to the top cannot be spoken about without mentioning the growth of their fan base and the league, as the WNBA smashed viewership and attendance records all season long. For the 12th time in MLB history, the New York Yankees and Los Angeles Dodgers will meet in the World Series. The Yankees won the American League championship over Cleveland on Saturday in extra innings as Juan Soto, who signed in New York on a one-year prove-it deal, proved it, blasting a three-run home run in the 10th inning, eventually lifting the Yankees to victory 5-2 in Game 5. Giancarlo Stanton was named the MVP of the ALCS as the Bronx Bomber cracked up four homers and seven RBIs over the series. It's the first pennant victory for the Yankees since 2009. Sunday in Los Angeles, the Dodgers won the National League Championship, defeating the New York Mets 10-5 in Game 6 of the NLCS. LA returned home and came out hot, taking a 6-0 lead by the end of the third inning. It's the second pennant victory in the last 5 years for the Dodgers, who won the Fall Classic in 2020. Game 1 of the 2024 World Series will be Friday night at Dodger Stadium in LA. Sometimes we are reminded just how behind the times sports can be, especially football. The absurdly antiquated architecture of the game may have cost the University at Buffalo Bulls their first conference loss of the season on Saturday as UB fell to Western Michigan 48-41. After scoring to cut the deficit to 7 points, Buffalo kicked off to the Broncos with just over a minute left in the fourth quarter. On the kickoff, the Western Michigan returner calls for a fair catch. The offense takes the ball at their own 25-yard line to start the drive. Buffalo had all three timeouts remaining at this point, so head coach Pete Lembo used each of them after each of the Broncos' three runs to start the possession. Stopped at the 34-yard line, Western Michigan rolled the dice and went for it on fourth down with 1 yard to gain. With 46 seconds left, Buffalo's defense keeps the Broncos' lead running back behind the 35, seemingly forcing a turnover on downs and giving UB a chance to tie or win the game. The ball was spotted short of the 35-yard line, but the Broncos were given the first down. The officiating crew brought out the chain gang to measure, and sure enough, the stick indicating the first down was a good 6 inches shy of the 35-yard line. There was no correction made on the field. The clock ran out to zeros, and Buffalo lost their first conference game on homecoming, no less. The Buffalo Sabres wrapped up their three-game road trip. The Blue and Gold picked up their first road win of the season on Saturday in Chicago as they beat the Blackhawks 4-2. It's still very early in the season, but there's already a major problem that needs to be addressed as soon as possible. The power play for Buffalo is still scoreless, going a whopping 0-21 on the year. The Sabres returned to home ice on Tuesday night, welcoming in the Dallas Stars. Puck drop at KeyBank Center is at 7 p.m. Yesterday, the Buffalo Bills played their first home game in a month, defeating the Tennessee Titans 34-10. In Josh Allen's 100th career start, he threw for over 300 passing yards. The rookie Keon Coleman led all players in receiving yards, and newcomer Amari Cooper made a great first impression on Bills fans. He grabbed his first catch as a Buffalo Bill for a touchdown. The Bills turn their attention to Seattle as they'll head across the country next week for a non-league matchup. This has been The Scoreboard for Monday, October 21st. I'm Jack Cruiser for WBFO Sport.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.